Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, podcast of prior programs under public affairs, or on many streaming services, as well as the WDIY app. I'm back after being off for a couple weeks. Today is May 7th, 2025. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 41,113, the NASDAQ at 17,738, and the S&P at 5,631. Tonight's topic, well, what's the name of the show? Your Financial Choices. That's what we're going to talk about. Your Financial Choices. I'm getting back to the basics. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Cindy is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. You can also submit questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. So what do I mean, your financial choices? That's, you know, what we do every week, and we've been doing every week for over 15 years here at WDIY. I think I started on WDIY in 2009, so we're over 15 years every week talking about your financial choices. And, you know, I will say that the sooner you pay attention to your financial choices, the more choices you will have. So I'm going to give little, you know, tidbits or nuggets of wisdom that I've learned over the years, having, you know, worked in the industry for quite a while and working with clients for quite a while. Sayings that if you kind of incorporate them, it might help you, in a very simple way. I'm a simple person. I don't like making things too complicated, although one might think I make things complicated. I do love details. But I want to kind of break it down into some basics and give you a framework to think about when we talk about financial choices. So one of the first things I typically talk to about clients is the elements of financial planning. And if, as a CFP, as a professional, certified financial planner, they, you know, drill this into us through our training and education and exam about the elements of financial planning. And I think what is most important, or more important than just kind of understanding those elements, is understanding that a decision in one area impacts any number of other areas. So let's first talk about what those basics are. And I say them so often. So there's six. Hold up your fingers, your hands, six. First one, cash flow. Everything comes from your cash flow. So cash flow, very important. If you have cash flow and you're saving some money, well, what's the next thing we might do with that? We might invest it. So cash flow, investments. Investments can be, you know, individually held, jointly held, or we might have investments in what? Retirement accounts. So we've got cash flow, we have investments, we have retirement accounts. What else do we have to think about when we're making money as part of our cash flow, when we're saving money and maybe getting income off of our investments, interest, dividends, or retirement savings, where we eventually might take money out of our retirement accounts. What do we also have to pay attention to? Taxes. As we're going through our lives, we're getting married, we're buying a home, we're having children, we might have to make sure that we're taking care of our family, we have to take care of our assets. What do we call that? Risk management. Typically think insurance. And then after we've accumulated all of this wealth, or we have families and we want to take care of our families, but we also want to make sure we have enough funds for our whole lifetime, we call that estate planning. And I like to remind people that estate planning isn't just when you die. Your estate, think about, oh, I live on my estate, or I have an estate, or how big is your estate? It's your wealth, it's your assets. And what are you doing with that during your lifetime? And what are you doing with that when you're gone? So it's about managing it so that you have assets available to you for your lifetime. And then when you don't need those assets anymore, meaning you're gone, where are they going to? So let's review that. Cash flow, investments, retirement accounts, taxes, risk management, and estate planning. A decision in one of those areas impacts another area. So let me start with some of the very, very basics, and that is cash flow. Why do we want to pay attention to our cash flow? Why do we want to pay attention to the ins and the outs, the inflows and the outflows? Because, you know, whether you like it or not, all of your life, there are financial decisions on a daily basis. So the quicker you can get your arms around understanding your finances, how this all works, how you spend, the better position you're going to be in your future decisions. At the end of every show, for regular listeners, I say be proactive, not reactive. When we are proactive, we are in front of our financial decisions, and we have more options. If we are reactive, we're trying to unwind maybe decisions we made, or correct decisions we made, or fix something that we might have done wrong, or regret what we did. We're having to be reactive. That, you know, does not give us as many opportunities or options. So it's always better to be proactive. Now, there might be circumstances where you couldn't be proactive for whatever reason, so don't beat yourself up about it. But try to always be in front of your decisions. Think it through. I've given this example before. On you know, a prior show, I just remember my husband, this sticks with me forever and ever, when we were first together, going through the grocery store line, and they have impulse items at the checkout, and I was always tempted by those impulse items, and he'd say, you know, that they do that so that you buy. And it all of a sudden made me more present in the emotions of buying and what, how I'm being manipulated maybe into making decisions that aren't necessarily good for me. So it's about taking a moment to kind of stop and think about what you're doing to give yourself more options. So some of the other tidbits, one of the other tidbits I'll say, so remember being proactive, not reactive. You have more options, more decisions. Cash flow is very important. And how can we watch cash flow? So the first tidbit I'm going to give before we go to the break is spend less than you make. I mean, it sounds like it would be easy, or, you know, common sense, but there are a lot of people who spend more than they make. And how do we know we're spending more than we make? When we're having to borrow more than we make, or we have credit card debt. There's certain kinds of debt that I would say is okay, but then there's certain kinds of debt that we can avoid or should avoid. And we'll talk about that, because that kind of debt does not help you with your future financial self. So tonight we're talking about your financial choices. We're talking about getting back to the basics and just sharing some tidbits, observations, little hopefully sayings that might help you throughout your day to make you more present in your personal financial decisions. But if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about your financial choices tonight and getting back to basics. So one of the first elements we need to pay attention to, which snowballs into all of the other financial elements, is cash flow. Because in order to have investments, in order to have retirement accounts, to have an estate to manage your risk, you need money. And excess money is what helps. So when I said spend less than you make, how would you be able to do that? And I also talked about debt, so I'll throw that in here too. What I have observed over the years is that people who know how much money they're spending are usually the people with money. Now, I don't want to encourage someone to go crazy with this. Now, you know, I have very, very good friends, love them, and I would say this to their faces too. You know, never wanted his wife to buy furniture. And, you know, the neighbors were like, hey, I've got some furniture if you want it, you know, giving hand-me-downs. So I think you don't have to take it to that extreme, but maybe think about what you're buying, when you're buying, and how you're buying. Be a little bit more conscientious about it. Be in front of those decisions. So I'm not saying not to spend and not live your life, but if you have an understanding of how much you're spending, it's more likely that you'll have more money saved and more money to invest and more money to then work for you. I always have another saying where I say, you've worked hard for your money, let your money work hard for you. And that's the investing part. But I'm still talking about cash flow right now. So spend less than you make. How can you do that? You know, one quick method we talk to clients about, we call it the funnel method, where if you think you're spending, you know, $3,000 a month and your paycheck comes in and it's $4,000 a month, you have your $4,000 go into a savings account, direct deposit, you move $3,000 over to your checking account, and then you know you're spending, you know, if your checking account is always in, out, you know you're only spending $3,000 a month. Then we would see that savings account build up $1,000 a month in my little story here. $1,000 a month after a year, that's $12,000. So you're building up a nice reserve, a cash reserve, emergency reserve, very, very important. Why do we want an emergency reserve? We want an emergency reserve because cash flow. What happens if a big expense comes up that you weren't anticipating and you don't have the cash available? What's the first thing you're going to do? You have to, you know, maybe fix the car. You have to. You don't have a choice. And you don't have any cash, extra cash. So what are you going to do? You're going to put it on a credit card, and the credit card interest rates could be 19%. 29%. I've seen credit card interest rates at 29%. And then what happens? If you don't have any money in your bank account, how are you going to pay off the credit card? You may not be able to pay it off. So then you're making minimum payments. What happens then? Half of your payment is going to interest and only half is going to the principal amount. You're never going to get out from under it. Well, you know, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but could be take, you know, 15 years. But it's very hard to get out from under that kind of credit card debt. So by spending less than you make, you're building up an emergency reserve. It's very key to your future success. And again, for many of our listeners, that may not be a problem for you. It might be something that your children have to pay attention to, your children have to face. If you've always helped out your kids, they may not have that same kind of discipline that you have if you do have it. So it's something to talk about. You know, hey, kids, do you have an emergency reserve? Have you saved up some extra money? The other benefit of having that extra savings, particularly for young people, would be the opportunity to, now I'm going to talk about investments for a minute, to take any extra money they have and maybe invest it in a Roth IRA. If they have earnings, you have to have earnings and you have to be within certain income thresholds, but you could take some of the excess money and put it into a Roth IRA and start earning income tax-free funds for your future. The reason I love Roth IRAs so much is because you can always get out your original contribution without any penalties because you didn't get a tax deduction for it, but it's growing income tax-free and you can always get to it. Whereas if you put all of your money in, for example, the 401k, usually the plans have some handcuffs and the plan might say, hey, Lori, you can't take money out of your 401k until you're 59 and a half or until you're 65. Each 401k plan might have its own rules on when someone can access the money in the 401k. So it's really good to kind of have a diversification of where you're saving. So we want an emergency reserve first, some extra savings that you can tap at any time, and then a Roth IRA is a great second option, a great second bucket. And of course, we also, if you have extra funds, could be used to put into your retirement accounts at work. But this all happens only if you have extra cash flow. So that's why you want to spend less than you make. We also talk about setting it to set it and forget it. And the set it and forget it part is, you know, putting money into that 401k or putting in a monthly amount into the Roth IRA. The reason we would want to make sure we're reviewing what might be available to us through an employer plan, through a 401k, is if the employer is putting in money into the 401k on your behalf. So some plans don't put anything in. So some employers will offer a 401k, but they may not put anything into it for you. Some employers will put a match in to the 401k if you put something in. So if you put in 6%, maybe they'll put in 6%, unlikely. Maybe they'll put in 3%. So some employers I see might put in 3% if you put in 6%. They might put in, you know, 2% if you put in 4% then. So they might match 50% up to 6%. You have to look for each, you know, 401k provider. Certain, you know, 401k employers will put in a much higher amount. And I typically see this when they've moved from having pension plans or offering pension plans. So instead of, in lieu of putting money into a pension plan, they might offer a higher amount into a 401k. Again, the part to be careful of there is that you may not be able to access that money as easily. And if you're someone who might think, you know, you might be purchasing a house in 5 years, or you might be getting married in 5 years, or you're not sure what you might need, or you're too nervous and you say, I don't want to give up that money. I want to make sure I can get my hands on it. Well, that's why the Roth option is just phenomenal to me. Phenomenal. So I'd like to make sure that if someone's eligible for that and they have the cash flow, that they would do that. And what would be the circumstances where we wouldn't want you to set it and forget it? Well, I wouldn't want you to set it and forget it and run up credit card debt. So don't put, you know, 10% into your 401k and have $50,000 on credit cards, because that's going to cost you a lot more money than, you know, getting the match. So, and I've seen people do that. And so if you're someone who has high credit card debt, any credit card debt, I really encourage you to kind of review your situation. So tonight we're talking about your financial choices and getting back to the basics. And we're starting with cash flow, but we're going to go through the other elements of investments, retirement, taxes, risk management, and estate planning. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY. Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11 offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Cindy, and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. We were talking about your financial choices and getting back to the basics, talking about cash flow, spend less than you make, know how much you're spending, the funnel method I mentioned, have all your, you know, deposits go into your savings account, only move over what you think you're spending each month into your checking, and it should kind of always, you know, over time average out to like in and out, and hopefully your savings account builds up, you get your emergency reserve. Eventually, over time, hopefully you'll have even extra money. Consider doing Roth IRAs, which you can always get that extra money as long as you're qualified. And then, of course, get the match if you can at work. That's free money. We love the match. But don't do it in lieu of, you know, paying off credit cards. Credit cards, just it's just like a vicious cycle, people. So I really do not like people carrying credit card balances if you don't have to. So how do we kind of get through this when we talk about back to basics, and what kind of ideas can I give you to help you with your cash flow management if you are struggling with it? Well, I would say if you play tricks with yourself, play tricks with your mind, if you're someone who talks yourself into spending money, which, you know, I've seen and I've heard, it's on sale, it's a good deal, I have to get it, I need that. My kid needs that. My grandchild needs that. Can't pass it up. They're going to love it. And you feel the emotion and the love you're going to get when you give a gift, and an expensive gift. You have a lot of emotions in buying and purchasing and, you know, doing for others, which is like a wonderful thing. But it's just like the air mask on the airplane. You know, you have to take the oxygen first before you can help others. And you want to make sure that you're taking care of yourself first. If you think you're spending on your kids and you, or even charities, and, you know, you're giving to the church tons of money and you're not taking care of yourself, who's going to help you, you know, when you're 80 and you need some home care and now you can't afford it? I say all the time, and my husband and I say this, we live for today, but we plan for tomorrow, and your future self will thank you. So just as you talk yourself into those emotions of spending and buying and giving, you can use those same emotions, just turn around the dialogue to yourself. You know what? I love that. That's beautiful. It's going to be on sale next year, or it'll be on sale another day. Or do I really need it if I think about it? How many clothes are in my closet that still have the tags on it? Do I really need another shirt or another coat when I already have four coats? You know, so talk to yourself and say, what a great feeling I'm going to have when I'm able to walk away from that. What a great feeling. That's money in the bank. It's not money spent. That's not money on a credit card. That's not money wasted. That's money in the bank for my future. My future self is going to thank myself. So you want to kind of build up some empowerment. Another reason why I like Roth IRAs for young people so much is because it gets them in a good habit of saving. And then when they see it and they see it growing over time, they can get excited about it, and then they can have a whole new appreciation for saving and investing and saving for retirement. And I think it's like a catalyst for that, and it trains them in good habits. So it's you kind of have to do some self-talk. If you're one of those people who talks yourself into spending, you can do the same thing and talk yourself out of spending. And it's never too late to engage. I have had, you know, success stories with people, you know, much later in life, you know, kind of trying to come back. But it's a harder road, and you don't want to have to be that person at 70 years old having to continue to work because, you know, you don't have enough cash flow from Social Security or something like that. So never too late to engage. Get on it, and that's part of the basics. So the basics start with the cash flow. Now we have our emergency reserve. Maybe we have a little bit of a Roth IRA. So now if we have that Roth IRA, what did I say? The Roth IRA grows if you have it invested income tax-free. So if it grows income tax-free, do I want to leave it in cash? No, the whole point of the Roth IRA is to grow and grow income tax-free. We also have to understand that our investments take on different tax characteristics. So remember when I talked about the six elements? I have cash flow, I have investments, I have retirement accounts, I have taxes, estate planning, and risk management. When we're looking to put money in investments, not all of the investments are created equally. So typically when we put money into a retirement account at work, usually traditionally it was always pre-tax, meaning I got a tax deduction for doing that today. I didn't pay tax on that money today. That's because then in the future when I take it out, I'll pay tax on it then. Many, many employers now offer a Roth feature. So the Roth 401k at work, we're going to call that, I think it's like a designated Roth, that has that still follows the rules of a 401k. There's still limits of how much you can put into it. And the employer still is directing when you can get to it. All right. So, but you can put more into a Roth 401k than you can your individual Roth. But some people think that it's like one or the other, or you can't do both. Well, depending on your income, you may be able to do the employer plan 401k pre-tax, the employer plan 401k Roth, and the Roth IRA separate, individual. Again, it depends on your income thresholds and as long as you have earnings. But again, why do I like the Roth? Because if you do an individual Roth, you can still grab the original contributions if needed. But if you put it in cash, it's not growing tax-free, you're kind of losing the advantage. So then we're going to have to talk about what's the other element? Investments. So now we have this cash, we have investments, we have our emergency reserve, which might be in the bank. And if we're sitting on emergency reserves that we're just going to kind of keep steady, let's pretend your emergency reserve is $30,000 and you hope to never touch it. Well, then you want to look for a good money market account. It might be an online bank where you're going to get a higher interest rate. You can shop interest rates on your savings accounts or money market accounts. And you want that to earn a little bit for you if you know you're going to sit on it and have it. Then if you have this extra money and you decide to put it into a Roth, you could set that Roth up yourself at any of the custodians, you know, that you all know the names of that are, you know, advertise on football games. You could set up a Roth IRA and get it invested, hopefully. And depending on your risk tolerance, if you have some equity exposure, hopefully that's going to grow, but it's all going to grow income tax-free. Maybe you don't want to do a Roth. Maybe you make too much money and you can't do a Roth. You could put it in an individual brokerage account or a joint brokerage account if you're married and invest it there. Now, there's still going to be some income tax consequences on that, but it still could be more favorable than the 401k, which is ordinary income. It's more favorable than interest income, which is ordinary income. It's more favorable than, it could be more favorable than even bond investing if you have equities in your individual account. because equities, stocks, that's what I mean by equities, you own part of a company, they may pay a dividend, and those dividends typically qualify for a lower tax rate than your interest income. So these are the little elements and how they all work together. Getting back to the basics is understanding that the investments you make have different tax consequences and how you can leverage that to your own advantage by understanding and taking a little time to understand. Folks, we're talking about your financial choices. Back to basics tonight. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down. We can take it off air, or if you're comfortable talking live on air, you can certainly do that as well. So we're talking about investments. We're talking about understanding the difference in the taxation of how you invest. So cash, interest income, CDs, interest income, money markets, interest income, bonds, interest income. Interest income is ordinary income taxed at ordinary income tax rates. We all have, there's different income tax rates and there's tiers. If you're in a 22% tax bracket, it does not necessarily mean that you're paying 22% on all your income because there's tiers. There's a 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%, 32%, 35%. And the first part of our income has like a standard deduction or maybe itemized deduction. So it doesn't mean you're paying that amount of tax on all your income. And that's ordinary income. The dividends, if they're qualified dividends, and or if you sell an investment and you have long-term capital gains, then we have what's called the capital gains tax rate. If you're in a 12% tax bracket, the tax capital gains tax rate for qualified dividends and long-term gains is zero. So 12% versus zero. If you're in a 22% bracket, it's 15%. If you're in the 24% bracket, it's 15%. If you're in the 32% bracket, it's 15%. It doesn't go to 20% until you're in like the top tax bracket. So that's sometimes confusing when you listen to, you know, pundits on the radio or on television where they say, oh, you're paying 20% in capital gains. No, that's just the highest, you know, earners. So 15% is pretty good compared to, you know, a 32% rate. So you want to take advantage of that. But remember, what did I point out about Roth IRAs? Zero tax on the growth. So you want to think about how you're investing too. And I said you could go open a Roth at, you know, whatever custodian. You could do investments yourself with a custodian. You may want to work with an investment advisor. If you work with an investment advisor, there have been some studies. I think Vanguard did a study that said people who work with an advisor sometimes, you know, do better. And why I think that could be the case, without looking at the study, might be that an advisor sometimes has an overlay of discipline. That sometimes I think when people are on their own or individuals, they might not have the discipline that they need in investing. And let me see if I can. I've got a couple charts in front of me, and I'm going to see if I can explain them why you want to, if you have the savings now, we have our emergency reserve, we've built up maybe some investments, whether it's in the Roth or 401k, an individual account, we have some investments. Why is it important to pay attention to how we're investing too? It's because, number one, diversification is the number one contributor to performance, being diversified, not having your eggs all in one basket, meaning, you know, putting all of your money in gold or all of your money in, you know, a tech stock. It's about diversifying it across various types of investments. The other thing is controlling your emotions. So one of the back to basics themes we talked about early in the show about the cash flow is controlling your emotions on your spending, you also have to control your emotions on your investing, because we've said this number of times on the show, it's time in the market, not timing the market, because here's what you cannot time. You cannot time the drop and the recovery. So for example, in 2020, does anybody remember 2020? We had the pandemic. There was a drop of 34%. And if people were scared then and they got out of the market with a 34% drop, when did they get back in? You don't know. It's like when things start to feel better. And if you wait till you start to feel better, then you're buying in at a much higher cost than when you got out. What happened in 2020? You heard me say a 34% drop. You know how it ended for the year in 2020, up for the S&P. I'm talking about the S&P in particular, 16%. Now, a diversified portfolio, if someone has, you know, more stocks and bonds, kind of a diversification, they wouldn't have necessarily seen a 34% drop. They might also have not seen a 16%, you know, return at the end of the year either, because you wouldn't have had the full upside of the S&P. So that was an example of S&P returns. Now, we do have years like 2022 where both equities were down and bonds were down, but equities were down, I think, 25%, and they ended up down for the year at 19%. But what happened in 2023? In 2023, it had dropped 8% within the year, but ended the year up 24%. So if you got out in 2022 because the market was down, and it's painful and it's hard to take it, and you just sit there and, you know, you hang on by your fingernails, but because we don't know when the market could come back, if you get out and you can't anticipate when it's going to get better, you miss out on that big bump up. So that's why it takes discipline in investing. So discipline in your emotions, in spending, in cash flow, and discipline in your emotions in investing and the stock market. And in fact, I have another chart which is almost too complicated to explain, but it does talk about consumer confidence and the stock market. And what it has demonstrated is, and these, by the way, are charts from JP Morgan Asset Management from FactSet. So one of these other charts is consumer confidence in the stock market, and it talks about when consumer sentiment is like really down, like, you know, hitting lows, and the recovery, you know, the within 12 months, the S&P returns. So in October 1990, I think the consumer sentiment index was like 60-some%, and within the year, the market returned 29%. So there had been a recession, you know, consumer sentiment was, you know, really down, consumer confidence was really down. And yet within 12 months, the market returned 29%. There was a recession in 2009. And, you know, 12 months after November of 2008, there was 22% returns. So these are the kinds of things you don't know what's going to happen. Another reason why the emergency reserve is so, so important. And in fact, we talk to our clients not just about the emergency reserve, but do they have spending cash flow needs within a year, 2 years, 3 years? Like if you know you have to buy a new car, you know you have to put on the roof. We do that in addition to the emergency reserve, because we don't want you to have to get emotional or react and get out of the market at an inopportune time. So you kind of plan ahead for those. So a little bit of planning. And that's another emotional kind of basic you have to get over. I know myself, sometimes I think live for today. But remember I said, but we need to plan for tomorrow. Sometimes people get overwhelmed by that. And if you get overwhelmed by that, then that's when you hire professionals maybe to help you kind of through those emotional, you know, decisions that you have or that you can't kind of get over. In fact, next week, my topic is going to be, you know, what's your story? Because one thing I've realized over time is when people think about financial choices, quite often people only want to talk about investments. And that is just such a little part of your story. That is such a little part of what you need to pay attention to be successful in your financial decisions. So I want to talk about what your story is, because that informs all of the decisions and that we're talking about tonight. If we understand your history, we understand where you're coming from, we understand what makes you tick, we understand, you know, where you have confidence, where you have insecurities, why do you invest the way you invest, why do you spend the way you invest, we can have two kids from the same family who are very different. And here's like a quick example. If you grew up in a house that was so austere that you never spent a penny, you could grow up mimicking that, doing the same thing. Mom and dad never spent a penny. I can never spend a penny. I have to be very careful. My mom and dad taught me right. We don't spend anything, and you become almost miserly with your money. The second child might be, oh my gosh, I have no way am I going to live that way. Life's too short. I'm going to spend whatever I want. I'm going to live my life. I'm going to, splurge and have all this fun. And we could have two very different outcomes in that story, but they were raised by the same people. But you kind of have to understand, where it's coming from in order to inform your own decision making. I was just talking to someone today about, she had a little experience when she was younger where she, actually was ahead of the game, way ahead of the game at a young age, wanting to invest, and kind of was poo-pooed by her parent. And that kind of, had an impact on her for the rest of her life. But I said, it's not too late now. Go back to that young girl. Be that person. You were ahead of you were ahead of the game then. You were right. So you kind of have to trust your own emotions and feelings and not necessarily be informed by these other influences outside. You have yourself to take care of, and don't always count on somebody else to do it for you. Take control, be empowered. I love the feeling when someone really makes great strides in their financial decisions and they empower themselves. It's an awesome feeling for me as an advisor, and it's an awesome feeling for them. And I love watching it. So it's never too late to engage. So talking about cash flow, talking about investments, being disciplined, and disciplined in having the money to invest and how you're investing, and understanding then the different tax implications on those investments. So I'll just talk about that let me go back to an advisor for a second. If you do decide to use an advisor, there are advisors you can check out. The CFP board, CFP.net, Certified Financial Planner Board, CFP.net. You can put in your zip code and search for an advisor. Just make sure, like I put in a zip code and I got someone from, Massachusetts. So just make sure when you enter the zip code that it's, you have to click for the town with the zip code as well. And you could find some information about various advisors. You can also check out brokers on FINRA.org, FINRA, FINRA.org. Do a broker check and see about background, if there's been any reporting on them. But ultimately, you want to make sure that you're going to be able to work well with someone too. So understanding cash flow, investments, tax ramifications. And I say taxes aren't necessarily bad, people, because it means you're making money. And net, you're still making money even after taxes. So if you don't want to pay taxes and you're making, $50,000, and I don't know what the taxes would be, pretend that's $7,000. If I told you, well, you could make $1 million, you're going to have a boatload of taxes on $1 million. But guess what? You're going to still clear $600,000. I think I would take the million. So, you have to put it in perspective when you're thinking about making money and paying taxes and, how you're investing and how you can mitigate some of the taxes by being smart about how you're investing. We'll talk a little bit more about the other elements of financial life, your retirement, financial your risk management and your estate planning when we come back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about your financial choices. You can also submit questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Cindy and she can bring it in. She's waiting on the phone line, 610-758-8810. We're talking about your financial choices and getting back to the basics. And while a lot of this will sound like common sense, I will tell you that going back to the conversation about emotions, emotions impact our common sense. I mean, I think that, you know, you can have common sense about certain things, but if you have some, you know, history, some baggage, some, you know, events that have happened in your life, sometimes our common sense goes out of the window when we're talking about financial matters. I hear all the time that people say they don't like it, they want to ignore it, it stresses them out, they don't want to think about it. We don't know where that always comes from. You know, I don't like cleaning, but it stresses me out. I don't like cooking. It stresses me out. So, you know, my husband does that. So you find a partner who can help you balance, or you find a professional who can help you balance. But we were talking about cash flow. Having excess cash flow over time provides you to be able to invest in for your present and for your future in retirement accounts. We talked about Roth IRAs. We talked about Roth 401ks. We talked about, you know, regular 401ks. Those are some retirement saving options. There's also individual retirement accounts for people who don't have employer plans available to them. There are individual retirement accounts you can do, whether it's a deductible IRA, traditional IRA, or the Roth, which does not get the deduction but grows income tax-free. So there are a lot of options in retirement accounts. I've also talked about making sure that you understand what your retirement accounts are. Some people might have 401ks. They might have Roth 401ks. They might have after-tax money in their 401ks. They might have employer stock in a 401k. All of those have different tax implications, ramifications, and distribution options. Be very, very, very careful. I can't tell you enough how often I think people need to make sure they understand their 401ks before they roll them over. We do have a caller. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Lori.
How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
We have some gold at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's jewelry. It's some rings and all. It's not a ton of gold, but it's probably, I don't know, a couple ounces worth.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just been hanging on to that. And I'm wondering, I mean, obviously you would keep an eye on the price of gold if you're holding on to it as an investment. But is it, you know, at this point we're nearing retirement. I don't know if we should keep hanging on to it or look for the next opportunity to sell it, put it in our will for our heirs. I'm just trying to decide what to do with this.
Well, you know, frankly, Carolyn, I don't actually know a lot about gold. We have, you know, typically said that's speculative, and sometimes gold can be a good thing to hold and sometimes not. And I would suspect that people are talking about gold more now than usual because there's so much uncertainty in the market. So I think there is kind of a a recent, I mean, there's always been a, you know, gold has always been available and people have always talked about holding gold and having gold. I'm not saying that people haven't invested in gold, but I think there is more of an interest in it now just because of the current, you know, volatility in market conditions.
Right.
As far as, you know, what I usually will say to people is, can you take the gold to the grocery store and buy your groceries? Not usually. It could be, you know, a hedge against, you know, market fluctuations. But if we're talking about gold jewelry, it might not be a lot anyway. If the only reason you're holding on to it is for as an investment, then I would say it's just a personal decision as to when you sell it or not, depending on, you know, how much difference would it make if you were to sell it? Is it, you know, $1,000 or is it $100,000? You know, it could be very different. So I really can't give you any advice as to buy it, sell it, keep it, hold it. I say it's a personal decision, but, you know, typically I think it's a little bit more speculative. It's nice to have some gold, particularly gold jewelry. At least you can enjoy it and use it and wear it versus like gold bars that you put in the safe in your garage floor.
Well, it's, yeah, that's the thing. It's in a safe. It's nothing we use. So I'm kind of feeling like if I just hang on to it as maybe thinking of it as part of a portfolio, that's not a bad idea.
Well, I just looked up, you know, the a 20-year return from 2004 to 2024, supposedly, and I'm just looking this up, the 20-year annualized return on gold supposedly is 9.8%. The S&P is 9.2, real estate 7.1. So whether that's accurate or not, I'm not sure. But, you know, it looks like gold could be, you know, a hedge, part of a diversified portfolio. You know, diversification's good. That's what helps with returns.
Okay. I think maybe I will just hang on to it then, and maybe an heir will need it more than I do, right?
Yeah. Okay, Carolyn, thanks for calling.
Okay, have good talking to you. Take care.
Bye-bye. We have another caller. We have Dave from Nazareth. Hi, Dave. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi, Lori, how can I help you?
Okay, a question. My daughter-in-law has inherited an IRA from her cousin who recently passed away, and as well as an ESOP.
Mm-hmm.
So the question I have is really related to the ESOP. Mm-hmm. Can the ESOP, the funds in there, be rolled over into an inherited IRA?
I would never do that. So if she hasn't rolled over anything yet, this is what I was talking about. If you heard me say NUA, employer stock, and a 401k, if there's employer stock and a 401k, it could just be called that, or it could be called ESOP, Employer Stock Ownership Plan. And typically, unless it's like a private company, because sometimes there's ESOPs in private companies and you can't take the stock. And then, yes, you probably have to roll that over. But if there's employer stock in like a major corporation, like in the Lehigh Valley, we have PPL, we have Air Products. If there's employer stock in that's, you know, tradable public stock, even if someone passes away and we inherit, the beneficiary can take the employer stock out of the 401k and pay tax on the cost basis of that stock. And the difference between the cost basis and the fair market value of the stock is called NUA, net unrealized appreciation. That is subject to long-term capital gains, not ordinary income tax. So a quick example, if the employer stock's cost basis was $20,000 and it's worth $100,000 today, if she rolls it over to an inherited IRA, it's $100,000 of ordinary income eventually when she takes it out. But if she takes the employer stock out that has a cost basis of $20,000, she would pay income tax on the $20,000. And then the difference is just in an individual account. There's no required minimum distribution on that. She takes out the employer stock. She has a cost basis of $20,000. If she sold the $100,000 the next day, she has long-term capital gains on $80,000 in my little story. Or she lets it sit there for a while. If it's a good stock, she could keep it. But if she rolls it over to the IRA, it's ordinary income forever. You're done. That's one of those reactive decisions. Can't do anything about it. So being proactive, okay. If she hasn't already taken it, she needs to call them. And you have to be very specific, because sometimes you call these, you know, custodians on the phone, they don't know. I mean, you have to say NUA, employer stock, send it to a different account. So she would open up an inherited IRA for the part of the 401k that's not the stock, and she would open up a brokerage account to move the ESOP.
Oh, okay. All right. I understand then what's probably is the best option.
Yeah. Once you roll over from employer stock, you're screwed, basically.
Okay.
To the IRA. So, yeah, I always tell people, no, don't. Now, if someone told me the stock's worth 100 and the cost basis is 100, that I wouldn't roll over. That I wouldn't probably take. I would only take it if the cost basis is low, you know?
Okay.
If it's right, worthwhile. Yeah, are you following me on that part?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I haven't. She has a statement that she just received from his employer,
uh-huh.
Former employer.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't seen it yet, so I'll take a look at that.
Yeah.
And see what the cost basis is and you know, the current market value of those.
Right. And Dave, let me mention just for my listeners that sometimes if I'm the one who's doing the taking the money out, and let's pretend I'm only 45 and I leave that employer, I might have a 10% early withdrawal penalty if I take out the employer stock. It still might be worth it, but I might do it. But in this case, she's inheriting. That's an exception to the 10% penalty if she's under age 59 and a half. It's an exception to the 10% penalty. She should still be able to take out the employer stock. So what you're looking for is a low-cost basis and a decent amount of NUA. Okay?
If she is, and she is under 59 and a half, but mm-hmm. if she decides to go ahead and roll that over, roll that stock over into an
individual account. Uh-huh.
Does she have to cash out of that,
no.
or can she roll it over in kind? Okay.
She takes it in kind. You have to take it in kind. You have to take it in kind to keep the NUA. So you have to take it in kind. And then if that, in my story, I had a $20,000 cost basis, $100,000 fair market value. That $80,000 is long-term. If I sell it the next day, it's long-term. But if I hold it for 6 months and it grows another $10,000, that $10,000 is short-term, but I still retain the long-term portion on the NUA. Once I hold it all for a year or more, and let's pretend it grew another $20,000, now it's all long-term.
Okay.
So the long-term period is on the NUA from day one. It's long-term.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
All right.
Good
luck. Good luck. Thank you for calling.
Bye.
This is why I love understanding the details, people, and being proactive, not reactive. If we're in front of our decisions, we have more options, and more options give you a chance for better success on your financial journey. So we talked about the interplay of cash flow, investments, retirement accounts, taxes, risk management is insurance. You know, that's really just making sure you're protecting your assets. I always tell people if you have insurance, nothing happens. it's when you don't have insurance. So make sure you have adequate coverage because you don't want to be stuck thinking you're going to try to, you know, lowball your insurance. And all of a sudden you have a flood and you never got flood insurance or you sinkhole insurance, something like that. And estate planning, of course, should always be taken into account, making sure you have your documents, your wills, power of attorney, living will, and trust if needed. And of course, coordinate that with your beneficiary designations, your probate, non-probate. Do you have primary beneficiaries? Do you have contingent beneficiaries? You want to make sure that you coordinate all that because you might not realize it doesn't pan out the way you thought it was when you actually break down the asset titling and the beneficiary designations and your will. So you want to make sure you, kind of do like a flow chart to understand it all. Next week, we're going to talk about what's your story, and I'm going to talk about the importance of understanding your story, just like we did just now for Dave and his daughter-in-law, to make sure that you know, how something applies to you, the fingerprint of your financial life. Thank you, Cindy, for being here. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, callers. Thank you, James. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.